The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for Mac and Me from 1988. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Is it a freshly grilled take on the cute alien genre, or is it a mass-produced Mac movie? We watched Mac and Me to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme!
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. Watch this movie, do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features cast. This time talking about Mac and Me from 1988. I am one of your hosts, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my good friend and co-host...
Christian Fletcher. Thank you, Trevor. And I should apologise, or I don't know, maybe you want to thank me for the suggestion of Mac and Me for this week.
I have mixed feelings. I won't say any more right now, but I have mixed feelings.
Well, it was interesting as you were announcing it, I was thinking to myself, what was I doing in 1988? I'm like, oh, that's right, I was having a Macca's birthday party for my fifth birthday. So that's quite an interesting connection. I don't know if I had any of my guests dressing up in teddy bear costumes and dancing throughout the restaurant, but I don't know, I might have to ask my mum about that.
I want to know if there was a fully choreographed dance number at your birthday party then.
Hey, if I was a little bit older, actually no, I was putting on shows when I was quite young. Yeah, I think it would have been something I would have done there. So yeah, so thank you very much, Trevor, for having me back on the Rufus Project. That was an interesting segue.
Absolutely. So as you can tell, we're already making references to some of the more interesting aspects of this movie. So we probably should just get on with it and tell you what it's about. I've dug up a synopsis here. A boy in a wheelchair befriends a little extraterrestrial separated from his family. Aww.
But the plot also sounds quite familiar to another big film of the early 1980s, 1982's E.T. I think it's pretty much feels like a line-for-line plot remake. And I suppose that I think this film's been often referred to as the E.T. ripoff of the 80s, and I don't think I can think of a better title for this movie.
Absolutely. But no, look, it's completely different. Elliot and E.T. had a bicycle. Okay? our little friend here is in a wheelchair. Completely different movie.
I know, and from what I read, actually a lot of criticism this movie had was for featuring the lead in a wheelchair and not sort of going into a bit more explanation of it. But I know we'll talk a bit more about some of the, let's just say, stunts that they pull off with the wheelchair, and probably a lot of things that aren't very, I think politically correct would be the term, or just for 1988 still would have been a bit, was that quite suitable? So, but we are going in with Mac and Me being a movie that was half funded by, I have got a note here about that, it was half funded by McDonald's, but I believe it had a profit-sharing arrangement with Ronald McDonald Children's Charities, so they wouldn't have got much of a big profit back from that, though.
Yeah, if you, I haven't actually noted this in any minute so far, but if you listen to the end of last week's podcast, or if you checked out the original theatrical trailer for this movie, it is actually introduced by Ronald McDonald, and at the other end there is like a little thing about the you know, so much of the profits would go to Ronald McDonald House, which is all very lovely. But we probably should, before we get into more trivia, we probably should talk turkey first. We got a turkey trivia the wrong way around, Christian.
Yes, I know. I'm all flustered from Mac and Me. You've got to understand.
Okay, fair enough. You're very keen to get into a lot of this stuff, so I think it's definitely a good one to push on with. So first we'll talk turkey. This was rated 3.4 out of 10 on IMDb. It had a budget of $13 million, I think largely paid for by two particular companies. We'll get into that. And at its box office, it took a grand total of $6.4 million.
Ooh, and as we know with a lot of figures, that original $13 million was probably double that, and yeah, that was not good receipts, especially for a film that was, I suppose, backed by these two major companies, McDonald's and Coca-Cola.
And yeah, trust us, guys. If you watch this movie, it's very obvious that McDonald's and Coke were the major sponsors. So much so, if we get into the trivia, that there was some extensive scenes within an actual McDonald's, but the McDonald's that they filmed in was one built specifically for crew member training and filming of television commercials. So everything inside worked, but it never served a real customer. And when it wasn't being used, it was locked up behind a chain link fence. From its construction to the day it was torn down, it was never open to the public.
Oh, interesting. And so this is the same. Yeah, this is the one that was used in the infamous Macca's dance scene of the film, I suppose. Because I think I read somewhere in one of the bits of trivia going, have you noticed in the background no one's actually eating any food? That would probably be why.
Another fun thing too, I never actually saw this myself, but apparently there was a running gag between Conan O'Brien and Paul Rudd, is that whenever Paul guest starred on Conan's show, he was going to cut to a scene from his newest movie, but instead they showed the clip where Eric rolls off the cliff and falls into the water, and Paul Rudd was been doing this joke even up to and including his promotion of Ant-Man in 2015.
Oh, I thought it was so great, because I had heard, you know, it's sort of a bit of urban legend that, oh, not urban legend, it's a legend that he does this sort of thing, and yeah, I was surprised that he was doing it up until 2015, as soon as you take, for anyone that would see this clip, you know, as soon as you take that out of context of the whole movie, well, actually, the movie is pretty bizarre anyway, but in the context of it, you're going, what the hell is this from, because it's just so out of place, and also quite, again, one of those scenes where you just shudder and go, this is so politically incorrect or not good to use. But I'm jumping ahead of myself again, so it's good to see it still being used in pop culture, I suppose. I think Mac and Me's become somewhat of the Howard the Duck kind of alumni with the you know, one of those so bad it's good titles.
Yeah, I think more people know Mac and Me than Howard the Duck, but I think they do share a similar strata, shall we say, in film history. This movie is listed among the 100 most amusingly bad movies ever made in Golden Raspberry Award founder John Wilson's The Official Razzie Movie Guide. It in fact got the Razzie for Worst Director for Stuart Raffel, and it even got a Razzie for Worst New Star, and that particular star was Ronald McDonald playing himself.
Oh, that's hilarious, because I think a lot of, again, we were saying about the promo and things like that, I think another big thing was it features a rare cameo by Ronald McDonald, so, oh, well, it was, I don't think he would have had much of a career after this. I don't think he was seen in many more movies, but I actually think that we probably got our fair share of any reference to Maccas from movies just in that one film. They never have to have them in anything else ever again, because we definitely get our quota with Mac and Me, but yeah, so the rare cameo by Ronald McDonald, thank God it's only a small cameo. But actually, another funny thing in that, I know we'll be talking about it later, the Macca's dance scene, I read somewhere too that Jennifer Aniston is actually one of the extras that's dancing outside the Macca's. So there you go, it didn't kill her career. She was too young for it to affect her.
Yeah, I think it was just, hey, come here and dance like a cool kid. And that's all it was. But talking about other names... apparently, both Kim Basinger and Angelica Houston were each offered the female lead role, and both said no.
Yes, I can kind of see why, and I think going with this no-name cast has probably allowed it to sort of, I don't know, I think, it, God, could you imagine, it probably would have been up there with sort of Mummy Dearest and these other sort of films that are just so, go against sort of the other films that these people do. Like, could you imagine Angelica Houston having to look back and now go, oh, I remember the time when I was in Mac and Me? It's just, yeah, I think it's probably a smart choice. And I think as a result, we've pretty much got a virtually, you've probably got some notes there, but a virtually no-name cast, I suppose.
Yeah, I think the older brother had appeared in a couple of other, like, dodgy 80 movies, but aside from that, just generally, if you do see any of these people in other movies, they're pretty much bit parts. Nothing really major, I think, came for anybody from this movie.
Yeah, I doubt Mac and Me would have been a big big something, a movie to set your resume on fire. It's just actually you'd probably want to set the movie on fire. But anyway, I'm jumping ahead of myself.
Very nice. Okay, well, probably again, if we want to move on, and we do need to set our baseline, if you haven't already just done that, Christian, and
I
see
know,
what
I
we're
know.
working from. Now, this one, I've got to admit, digging through the reviews, it was very difficult to find one that I think really encapsulated a lot of what people thought. And I've got to admit, this one's a bit of a long one, so please be patient with me. But the title of this review is, well, this one really dips its end of the seesaw. I bought this not long ago. I'd heard quite a lot about it, but hadn't seen it, and I was bound and determined to see if it was as bad as I'd heard. Well, it isn't. Actually, it's almost indescribably awful. Never mind the ET cloning job, similar in a way to a room full of hideous botched Ripley clones in Alien Resurrection. Don't even think twice about the incredible product placement. Those things are too well known to need discussion. What makes it so abominable is the characters are so shallow and the script so idiotic that it's almost impossible to think that the people emoting before the cameras, I won't pollute my keyboard by calling it acting, didn't realize what cultural sewage they were in up to their hips, or in Jade's case, knees. Truth be told, I found this filmed chunk of vapid stupidity to be so bad that I couldn't watch it in one sitting. I think the filmmakers were deliberately trying to see what they could get away with, and this insult was the result. I have no idea what motivated these people to sign up. Being in this did nothing for Calgary professionally, and I'm sure Jonathan Ward wished he'd never signed on the line. I'm sure the two are quite successful today in their chosen fields, but whenever the 80s totally rad older brother appeared, toting his all but obligatory skateboard, or the disabled kid with a hair like aluminium rolled in and spoke in his grating, irritating squeal, all I could think was, you putz. By all means, buy it, but do it to add it to your bad movie collection. That is its only virtue. 1 star.
Oh my gosh! One of those moments when a review pretty much, you're finding yourself nodding with a lot of things about that. So yeah, very well chosen actually. Not one actually going to straight to the bad. It's actually looking at, and reminding me about how many monumentally weird and bizarre things happened in this movie.
I tell you what I did like. Well, first of all, the fact that it was just under 100 minutes, so that's not too bad. And then we saw the MGM line again.
I know, but why is the MGM line coming up when we're talking about movies that are so bad it's good? I'm starting to go, MGM, you're slipping. But yeah, so from what I saw, it was originally released because I was watching it on the DVD where because I know MGM buy back the rights to a lot of things. So I believe originally, it would have been released by MGM. So shame on them.
Oh, well, but yeah, again, I get a nice buzz from seeing the MGM lion. It's like one of those old refreshing things that you just make you go, before you
And
got to look at the painted backdrop of space.
Oh, I know, and that's the thing. Like, oh gosh, well, they don't waste any time getting into the creepy aliens. And look, I'm gonna say this straight up because it pretty much does happen straight away. But the aliens in this film is probably a thing that I could not get away. I could not separate myself from how funny this was. Like, literally, the alien design was laughable. And as I said, they show you quite fairly early on. So already you're going in going, oh gosh, this is in bad movie territory. So, and the fake, I don't know, to me, even the effects seemed bad for 1988.
But yeah, I tell you what, this is just—I mean, the aliens were the aliens, and they weren't particularly appealing. But just the way the—I suppose the dad alien portrayed himself—that was just a little unsettling right from the word go.
Just the weird, the weird walk and it was quite strange because I suppose at the start we're all just hearing these all because like, they don't speak or make any kind of they just do this weird whistling quite kind of sound which we do hear throughout the rest of the movie. But it's quite a interesting way to open the film, I thought.
Yeah, and considering Like, I suppose, because obviously throughout the movie we get to find out just how intelligent and clever and magical they are. So it's a bit of a curiosity that when a sudden space probe lands, they decide to throw a rocket at it and then poke it with sticks. You know, that doesn't really seem to be the best course of action.
Yeah, no, it seemed like, yeah, but again, I think they weren't wasting much time into going, okay, we just want to set up, we've got aliens, they're going to get sucked up, they're going to be taken to Earth, and then our story's going to start. That's what I kind of got this feel from that opening thing, so they weren't wasting any time. But from memory too, the spaceship looked a lot like, looked like just a lot of alfoil. I don't know, just as I said, the effects just seemed pretty laughable for me. But hey, if we're supposed to be on space on some other planet, I suppose we can use our imagination a little bit more. But yeah, I also think a lot of this was to be try to be a lot tamer for kids as well, like, because I know E.T. is much more of a, like, I know that's a family film as well, but a lot of elements are dark, and I felt in this all the time they were trying to make it a lighter sort of version. So I'm thinking, mm-hmm. if that was also another thing early on as well, to make it obviously look cheesy and tacky so it's tame to appeal to kids.
Yeah. Well, we'll get on to how that lightheartedness goes later in the movie. But,
yes.
But yeah, I mean, as soon as the vacuum or the suction thing comes out, you can pretty much see where it's going. And as you said, they all get sucked up into the space probe. But it's amazing that they got the chance to, because that space probe was not on what I'm guessing was meant to be one of the moons of Saturn, by that backdrop. It really wasn't on there very long, and it flew back to Earth in record time. For 1988, I mean, it's just amazing that, you know, that it could travel so far so fast, and also that the aliens could actually survive that trip through space. So that was I was already coming up with issues, I guess, that early on.
Yeah, like, I think I read somewhere about the theory of, they must have no skeletal system because they just suck up, like, anything in these things. And because it seems to be a couple of times throughout that's right. Later on, when they suck him up, I think one of the characters in the vacuum, yeah. So there seems to be this whole thing of, yep, just whatever's going to get them from A to B, and let's move on to the next thing. Because I think, yeah, they were just trying to hurry up the setup a bit, because I think I think straight from there we're back at the space depot where they where the aliens are. Yeah, I can't actually remember.
Well, probably if you can't remember, because the whole bit where they get back to Earth and the scientists checking what the space probe brought back, like, you know, the initial bit happened so fast and it was at such high pace, and then we got this very methodical, very procedural, like, opening of the space probe, and with the instructions from another room, and it really was just plodding. I don't think it lasted too long, but it definitely felt longer than I thought it probably should have or would have been, before again the aliens come out and we discover that they've got the ability to basically break through anything and are apparently indestructible.
Yeah, and I think they make their way through or pretty much escape from this thing. And now I'm actually already forgotten how they separated again, because I know it ends up being with, oh, that's right, because they end up with the parents end up being, I think, sort of caught by the government officials or something like that, and then Mac gets through. I can't actually remember that bit. God, it's just too much weird stuff happens later on, I think, so early on I'd forgotten what happened.
Yeah, I think Mac, the mysterious alien creature.
Alien creature, but also sounds like a Macca's reference.
Yes, I know. I might imagine that has a mysterious alien creature in their burgers. Sorry. I think the little one who's the main concern of the movie, the one known as Mac, I think gets out first, and makes a pretty much a clean break for it, and then the other ones come out after he's already gone, and like the scientists and stuff and the military or whatever have got a better, offer up a bit more resistance. So they get separated there. And then even further when, Mac makes his way, gets run over, splattered on the windshield. No harm for him though. And, jumps in the back of our hero family's car.
That's right, we're about to meet, you know, again, some of the best actors ever used in a film. So, and it's funny because I don't know, a few years ago we looked at the Montrosity Troll 2, and automatically I'm just sort of thrown into that really tacky, cheesy, late 80s feel where it just sort of, you, again, when you said 13 million budget, I'm looking at this movie still going, scratching my head where that money even went. But yeah, so we meet the Bland family, let's just say, I want to call them.
Yep, the Cruz family, I believe they are. I've just got my list of characters here because otherwise I would never remember a single person in this movie.
I know the boy's name's Eric. I think that's about it.
Yep, that's right. The boy's name's Eric. But that's also where we get to meet one of our other stars straight away, a can of Coke.
Oh gosh, and they are a star that's used probably has a much bigger cameo than Ronald McDonald does.
Ronald McDonald seems to be more concentrated with regards to that, but the Coke is used quite liberally, shall we say, in this movie, even to the point of when Mac manages to drink the rest of the Coke can, and he goes, "Mom, he drank the rest of my Coke." No holding back. The product name's right out there.
Yeah, yeah, and I think there's a few. So I think it's mainly Coke and Macca's, but another one I noticed, I know it comes up a bit later, but Skittles was another big one as well too. And like any time they'd show it, it's not just like with most product placement, it's not just a little glimpse of it. It's the entire logo, so you can see. And I know it comes up a couple of other times in it as well. But yeah, the Coke reference seems to be probably the most prevalent, and the fact too that we find out later that they pretty much the aliens survive quite well on Coca-Cola. So that's another probably clever thing by the script writers, or another thing where they're like, okay, we're gonna make sure we bring Coke in as much as we can into the plot as well.
Yeah, but you got to think, though, if Coke provides the necessary nutrients for these alien creatures, it doesn't really sound like it's a bad thing for humans to drink. So it seems a bit counterproductive.
Yeah, a good point. You know, they'll probably think, oh, instead just have a Big Mac where you go to McDonald's where you dance in the car park. That might be something humans are more likely to do. But yeah, so that's one of our, again, one of our very first sort of product things. But yeah, they don't hold back with any reference to it from then on.
No, they don't. And when the Skittles turn up, you can't just have a bag of Skittles in your hand. No, you need to hold it in your lap just right so that the logo is upright and plainly visible.
Well, it must have worked in some respect. I was watching the movie with a friend, and after it, we actually bought some things, and we bought some Skittles. So I'm thinking Mac and Me may have actually worked in that respect. But yeah, I did find myself the whole time wanting a Coca-Cola and a Big Mac, but that might have just been anything to be doing, but aside from watching this movie.
Now, I can't guarantee it, but I highly suspect if you play certain scenes in this movie backwards, it'll probably say, "Have a Big Mac, drink a Coke, eat some Skittles. You want them, don't you? Yes, you do. Coke, McDonald's, Skittles."
Oh, I would not be surprised. And hey, it all pretty much just sort of sums up the whole thing about how the Golden Arches and Macca's is something that kids always know from pretty early on, you know. So this would have really been, it's pretty evil actually of them to have made this a children's movie and put this in cinemas. But I actually think it was good of parents pretty much to not take anyone to go and see this movie, which seemed to be the result. But yeah, I think that was actually quite evil on their respect. So I wouldn't be surprised if there are secret messages in there making us want to eat them.
Little subliminal messages made out of patterns on the window and stuff like that.
It wouldn't surprise me. Then at the end of the day, I don't think they would have put that much thought into it, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know. The more I think about it, the more it's like, maybe I should look some of that stuff up.
I found a great website with some really interesting theories. I'll send you the link, but I might put it online for some listeners to have a read of too. It's quite funny. So,
that's got to be linked in the podcast description.
Yeah, oh, definitely. But yeah, yes, so we meet our family, and then they pretty much arrive in, I'm going to say Blandville, because again, I don't know, just it just seemed this film was just, it just, the scenery, nothing was visually exciting or anything in the cinematography. It just seemed like they were in this bland suburban town, and I don't know if that was supposed to, actually, this is one of the things that the theories were supposed to be saying, is that we were supposed to be this bland place to be a contrast to the aliens. So, but I don't know. I'm probably not. I'm explaining myself well there. But yeah, it didn't feel like, definitely didn't feel like a $13 million movie, especially with that sort of scenery.
It was straight out. Here's suburbia. It's in California. They very clearly state that these guys have been on a road trip across the country. Obviously bypassing NASA. I should know where NASA is located, but I've gone blank. Doesn't really matter that much. Sure. And then drive through to California. But the whole trip from near the NASA base to getting to California, they've got this little alien in the back, and nobody sees it at all until they all get out of the car at the house, and then the crazy California little girl across the road communing with nature in a teepee with a feather in her hair. Completely stock stark white, by the way. Not a single bit of Indigenous American in her at all. she's the one that's actually gets full view of this creature for the very, very first time. Of anybody in this movie, really.
It's kind of funny because, as always in this type of films, the person, it's always the crazy kid or the crazy person that sees the alien and no one believes them. But she ends up sort of being, and this is another thing, because she sort of ends up becoming sort of the Drew Barrymore character from E.T. I was going to say Grease, God, from E.T. Like the little sister sort of character. That's what I feel that what's her name? Debbie, the name. I can't believe I've got her name and hardly any other characters here. But yeah, so the girl in the teepee was Debbie. But yes, she sort of becomes the little sister role because she's pretty much one of the only people that know about Mac or ends up finding about Mac, so she sort of becomes a bit more of a bigger player in the film. But yeah, when you have to get the neighbour in a teepee to be a major part, you know they were running out of ideas.
Absolutely. But look, I've got to say that during this whole sequence, and of course they do play it for comic effect where like, you know, they people get glimpses of it and then move away, like the big brother's in his bedroom with his cool posters and stuff, putting on his cool sunglasses, and every time he puts his cool sunglasses on, looks at the doorway, there's the alien. He takes it off, the aliens are gone. Puts it back on, the alien's back, and then he goes and looks at the glasses as if they're the problem. So funny. And then just everything happening where you just don't quite see what's going on, but yet, you know, there's weird things happening, like the kid's remote control car bike goes by itself, and then the young kid Eric gets his television, and the alien reaches out and touches it, and it starts playing Snorks, I believe it was, the old cartoon Snorks, if anyone remembers that.
I was wondering what. Without
being plugged in. Oh my goodness. But of course, as soon as Mum comes in, it stops working when he unplugs it. So, you know, it's just like nobody, really catches on with what's going on. And I found myself thinking, like, the longer it took, because they stretched out so long, but I found myself getting engaged in just how the discovery, how the actual discovery of the creature was going to play out.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. That's what I've actually got in my notes too, that I felt like the whole meeting Mac section, or them finding out his existence took so long. That's why it felt like, again, sorry to use the comparisons to E.T., it just made you realise how much more thought went into E.T. about building these characters and making a sort of a connection between the alien. But as a result, we're spending pretty much up to 45 minutes of the movie and we still haven't sort of seen this alien yet, you know, as the family has, I mean. And so you're thinking, what more plot's going to happen? So, I was also thinking, what's this big reveal going to be when they do finally see him? But I don't think anything quite lived up to what I was expecting anyway.
Yeah, well, because again, like another thing which happens quite strange, like they get there and the house seems pretty much well set up, completely built, and then there's some random bit where the older brother has just got himself a buzzsaw and is chopping planks of wood in the house for no apparent reason. if only just to make sure that there's lots of power tools running around, lying around when Eric, the wheelchair bound kid, gets up in the morning, and all this bizarre stuff's happening, like a drill just comes through the wall right next to his head, and the buzzsaw's going off, and there's a hole cut in the front door, and it's basically destroying the house, and they go into the kitchen, and the kitchen's like got is like full of sand with cactuses and stuff, and the mum comes out and immediately blames the kid. How did all that happen without anybody waking up until that point? And it's like, how do you think this kid in a wheelchair did all this? I just don't understand. Oh,
and that's probably, again, where a lot of criticism came from. It's almost like they've written this role for, let's say, an able-bodied person or a character where they haven't actually mentioned any, you know, any disabilities or anything like that. But then it's like they've thrown... it makes you wonder if it is to do with the Ronald McDonald House Charities influence or something like that they wanted to be able to show. I don't know. I don't know what it is, and I don't... Again, everything, any reference to it seems so politically incorrect in this movie, but I wonder if it was, yeah, if it's just... it wasn't suited for the character, but, yeah, there were a lot of things like that that just didn't work. Sorry, I don't think I can pretty much explain myself well, but you know what I'm getting at, is I think that they've pretty much written the part of Eric as an able-bodied person, and then they've gone, okay, maybe we should put him in a wheelchair, because there's just so many things that don't even match up that they would put in. Because, again, as you said, why would he be... why would he destroy this entire room on his own? Or how could he, I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, a bit of trivia I did leave out that I did find is that the actor playing Eric... was genuinely disabled, so I'm thinking that maybe they actually did like a talent search through kids who were getting support from Ronald McDonald House. I have nothing definite for that, by the way. So don't, if you know otherwise, and you're a greater expert on Mac and Me than us, who have only watched it once, don't write me a nasty email. I am just supposing. I'm theorizing and throwing stuff at the wall here, but you know that seems to be a quite a plausible way, I suppose, of getting your main star for this movie that's being set up to support Ronald McDonald House.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty interesting theory. So, no, I think that would pop... Yeah, but as you said, we're only theorising, so...
Mm-hmm. But it was good also to see that, like, not only was the house very much wheelchair accessible, and they made quite a bit of a fuss about it being, you know, wheelchair accessible. The one bit, I think, where the mum says, oh, look, you can see out all the windows, and this is your room, and in his room there's a high window to the side that he couldn't possibly look out of.
He's like, oh.
but again, with trying to find the strange creature that's running around the house that he's gotten, he got a glimpse of, it was quite nice that the bushland at the back appeared to be quite wheelchair accessible too. He managed to get a fair way in it before things went a bit pear-shaped, and we got that famous scene of the wheelchair going down the hill, and the one that Paul Rudd quite likes.
And it is a pretty full-on scene. Like, you know, having that wheelchair just drop all that distance. I think I read a few things saying that this is, if that had happened in real life, he would have died. But, of course, they're not going to show that in this film. But even doing that in the film was just such an unusual thing. But, of course, then we've got probably one of the worst or hilarious shots of the movie is when we've got the superimposed face of Mac come up going, oh, no, something's wrong. Well, it doesn't actually say that, but you're kind of getting that idea. And then next thing he's sort of powerboating him from the middle of the middle of the water, bringing him all the way out. I shouldn't laugh because it is very controversial, I suppose, the way it's all happened. But, yeah, just it's just, again, one of those parts where you're just like going, oh, this is so ridiculous, but Mac saves the day.
Like, after that very dramatic fall, to have the kid just basically thrust across the top of the water with a wake coming up behind him was, you could not help but laugh. But we had a bit of a taste, I suppose, of some of Mac's extra abilities, where I think the the evening before that all happens, we get a shot of Mac, and tears are coming down his little face, and you're going, oh, you poor little thing, and he holds his hand up and starts whistling, and that whistle travels a very, very long way, and you actually, you get this shot of him communicating with his family, and the father just gyrating in a very unsettling way.
Yeah.
It's like you have no clothes on and you gyrate. It's not good. There's nothing to see there. They apparently have no genitals, but it's just not right. Mac is kind of cute in a very strange way, but the dad is not.
I think these aliens are the product of nightmares. To be honest, I don't think I can ever get the image of any of those aliens out of my face. But yeah, I'm out of my head. I do know what you mean about though. Mac's probably at least he's somewhat cute, but a lot of people said that E.T. wasn't cute, but they managed to make him adorable. But I think because they gave him a bit more of a character than they gave Mac, because as we said, you know, they wasted so much time sort of, where is he? Is he going to come out yet? Are we going to see him? You know, by the time we do actually see him, there's not really much movie left, which is probably a good thing, actually.
But, it doesn't take very long for the Maccas to be strong with this one. Yeah. After it comes out and the doctor walks off because the doctor thinks he's crazy because he's talking about the strange creature, and in walks the strange little TV sister girl from next door with her big sister who's fully dressed in the McDonald's uniform.
Oh, with the logo made sure it's purposely blazoned on the screen at any time. Like, I couldn't believe it. Yeah, yep. And I think... Yeah.
She couldn't be filmed from an angle that didn't show that logo.
And of course, yeah, as you said, how appropriate the big sister had to be a Macca's employee. And I think it's the part where she says the line, so why don't you stop by for a Big Mac? I can't remember what context she says it in. I think she's doing it as she's walking away. And I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, and then the big brother, who is of course admittedly smitten with her, just goes, I don't know about you, but I could do with a Big Mac, and says it really suggestively.
They're always trying to make him the comic relief, but it's not. Yeah, it's just kind of not working. Is it? By now, you're not really caring too much. I'm just wondering what kids would have been thinking by this stage. You definitely wouldn't have been going, "Mom, I want a McDo." Actually, I was going to say a McDo when you get home, but no, they probably just want a Macca's burger instead.
Yeah, probably just like, I want to leave this movie. Can we go to McDonald's?
Yeah, that's probably... they don't care, as long as people went to Macca's afterwards, so... But, so I think it's around... Okay, when... So I've got... I don't know when he ends up getting sucked up in the vacuum. I can't even remember how we went from the next bit. God, it's just seen one crazy scene on top of the other.
Yeah, I think it happens fairly soon after that, like that night. I mean, there's more Coca-Cola occurring in the meantime. More Coke happens. And then Eric is setting up a series of lures. He's attached a Coca-Cola with a straw in it to a bell so that he knows when the thing comes in, and then he's got just Coke cans going down the hallway to attract it, and then him and the younger girl from next door also sneaks in, and he says, oh, he's going to suck it up with the vacuum cleaner, but how does he know he can suck it up with a vacuum cleaner? That's the other thing that was never actually explained. It's like, oh, yeah, we're just going to suck it up with a vacuum cleaner. How do you know? How do you know that happened? You weren't there when it happened. You weren't there when it escaped from the space capsule. You have no idea.
It's not like NASA issued a press release about it or anything for public awareness. Yeah, I thought that was quite strange too. But like just the whole fact that, yeah, just, I was going to say, just the fact that any opportunity to have as many Coke cans as they can in one scene, not just one. So I just thought being able to use that in the plot was just, I don't know if you could say ingenious actually from a product point of view. But yeah, sorry, back to the vacuum. I have no idea where he was getting that idea from.
Yeah, and of course when they do suck it up, it all goes crazy, and the poor girl that's wearing the vacuum cleaner on her back, she gets dragged up the wall and across the roof, and just all this really bizarre stuff happening.
I know, it's just quite strange. So yeah, by now, if your kid hasn't already left and gone to Macca's, he or she would be wanting to. So yeah, it gets quite strange. But again, this whole this part just goes on for way too long when they really could have given it much more of a plot or tried to build up, you know, it's like what that review said earlier about how the characters were so shallow, you weren't sort of learning anything about them or even really caring.
Yeah, but yeah, when they do release it, it's in like, oh, it's hurt, it's not well. Of course it's not well, you sucked it up into a goddamn dirty vacuum cleaner because of all the stuff that came out afterwards. But they're there, like, you know, no great shock with what they're seeing, or they pretty much assume straight away that it's a mysterious alien creature, hence the name Mac, is put on quite early. I think by the very next day they were referring to it as Mac in all conversation, and, you know, it's cradling its head and they're giving it sips of, you guessed it, Coca-Cola, to help revive it. The big brother sees it, but of course it makes a run for it again before Mum gets home. And it's like, yeah, that was all very, just happened, pretty much.
Yeah, because it was pretty much, it seemed like, yeah, after all that big setup of, you know, them trying to find him, it then became the whole thing about, oh, trying to keep him from Mum, or trying to, or, you know, or trying to prove to Mum that, Mac exists. But yeah, and then I was gonna say we've got to the, oh yeah, because I think that's right, the big thing is Debbie, the girl next door, is having a birthday party. This is when we're going for the next day, and I think that's when it all sort of leads to them having to take Mac to Macca's. I can't remember what even brought them to put, let's just say they have to put him into a teddy bear suit, so I don't even remember when that bit comes. I think that might be the next bit,
but don't skip over the jogging scene with his mum with the almighty over-the-top power ballad as they jogged and rolled around the streets.
Oh, yeah. Oh, how could I have forgotten that? Another ludicrous bit. And it almost seemed like, why do we even need to have a power ballad when, again, we haven't felt any kind of connection to these people? Why are you putting that in there now?
It was just so over-the-top. I just started... laughing at this scene, and like, they're not doing anything in particular, they're basically just like, she's jogging down the street with him rolling beside her, and the music is so over the top, and then they back that up with the bit with, you know, they end up having to Eric doesn't want to leave Mac alone because Mac's not well or whatever, so yeah, gets him dressed up in the teddy bear suit, and they arrive at this McDonald's. They arrive at this McDonald's and there's a full-on dance routine happening in the car park as they roll up.
Complete with the big boombox and everything, or the big handle boombox. Yeah. I think the opening shot is the boombox front center on the road, and then all of a sudden these people start dancing. And everyone, there was a movie in the 80s called Breakdance, and I think Breakin' 1 and 2. Yeah, it reminded me straight of those sort of things, those real street breakdancing competitions that were really big in the 80s. But it's funny because I was watching with a friend, and he said the best comment, I've never done this at Macca's. I thought that was hilarious. I'm like, yeah, I don't think anyone has either. Except maybe Jennifer Aniston and a couple of other people.
But they went inside, and it was like every 80s stereotype you could possibly imagine is inside this Macca's, and it was like just this massive, massive party was going on, and there's Ronald McDonald as himself doing some colouring in with some kids and going, oh, hello everyone, before walking off screen. And that leads to a whole other thing where that you find out, oh, look, all these McDonald patrons are also professional dancers, because we're going to get another completely inexplicable dance routine inside the McDonald's, complete with Mac in teddy bear suit dancing on the counter in front of the dancing cashiers. What the hell?
It is so ridiculous. And it's because... anyone who's listening and doesn't want to watch Mac and Me, just YouTube at least this scene, because it's ridiculous. And as you say, you've got the you've got Mac, who everyone's thinking is this cool teddy bear that I think Eric, or they think it's Debbie's or Eric's, but yeah, anyway, honestly, we don't care because we know who it is anyway. And next thing, he starts busting out all these dance moves.
Yeah, a high tech teddy bear or something, a computer on a teddy bear that can dance quite effectively.
But at the same time, too, I think I would have rather one of those Teddy Rubskin things or whatever it was. It would have been less creepy than Mac wearing a teddy suit in the 80s. But yeah, this whole... And then, as I was saying earlier, the way that it's filmed, too, if you look really closely, you don't see anyone actually eating any Maccas. It just seems like they're all in this... Yeah, this Maccas set just doing a whole heap of cartwheels and all sorts of unusual things as every 80s stereotypes played out. And a lot of fluoro and a lot of sweatbands, too.
Yeah, but like I think this is probably a scene. It kind of, if you just watch the scene in McDonald's out of context, you're probably just going to think you're watching part of a really strange, like, cool 80s movie that had McDonald's sponsorship. I actually think this scene itself is so out of context with the rest of the movie, you kind of can't just watch it in isolation and get the full impact of just how... out of left field this scene is, and just how completely inexplicable that they've put this in here, just apparently to say, hey, look, we've got cool hip kids at McDonald's, and they dance, and they party, yeah!
And even our staff get involved. Yeah. You should come down to Macca's. It even extends out onto the street as well. I got the feeling, and probably a lot of times throughout this movie, that, yeah, it's like they've got these ideas for these product placement and hung a movie around it. And it almost makes you think, in hindsight, that pretty much this entire movie has been built around the inclusion of this one scene, it almost feels like. Like, we want to have a scene where it shows, Macca's employees dancing and all the customers getting excited, but let's make a movie around it so it can be an entire movie rather than just a commercial. It feels so much like that.
Absolutely, yeah. They wanted to show just how cool McDonald's could be, but I don't think anyone outside of the people in that scene have ever been to a McDonald's like the one that is portrayed in this movie.
I've been going to the wrong ones all these years. Or maybe they've just had way too many Coke and too much Coke and Skittles.
Who knows? Yeah, they've overdosed in Coke and Skittles and fries. But oh god, when the also subtle government agents turn up they just kind of know that Mac is there. We see them earlier surveying Eric's house, because there was like a brief interaction with them back when Mac first snuck into their car.
Yeah.
But like, again, nothing is really established on how they work out that, you know, this family is the one most likely harboring this particular alien life form, or how they manage to track it down to this particular McDonald's where they can't get to Mac because of everyone in their way dancing.
Yeah, dancing around. But yeah, it's like they've gone, because again, this is like, they're trying to follow that whole E.T. formula, because you know how we're sort of in the third act of the film, how, yeah, you've got the government coming in to try, you know, to take him down or take him back, and it feels like they're just going through the motions and going, okay, we're up to this part now, and yeah, so they don't really establish too much about how they actually find him. I did laugh at one of the reviews I read saying, oh, they were, the guys in the background, they're actually Steven Spielberg's lawyers turning up to stop the movie being made. I thought that was a really clever reference. So let's just refer to them as Steven Spielberg's lawyers. But anyway, because I think it's pretty much straight from there that they go into the infamous chase scene, I suppose, too, when you've got... I know in E.T. you had Elliot on a bike, but yeah, and you've got them chasing him with a wheelchair, but he still manages to outsmart all three or four or five of them. I can't even remember how many there were. The guy in the wheelchair manages to win... fair and square. It's just funny how they always manage to run into as many things as possible, and yeah, they just seem like the most hopeless people as possible. That, like, how were they even able to track Mac down? They can't even capable of doing anything else.
I wrote down specifically that chase scene with the government agents, they were basically the Keystone Cops.
Oh, yeah. That sums it up perfectly. And I suppose having the whole, you know, and not meaning any disrespect, but having the wheelchair in it made it, you know, it made it, unfortunately, put it on this sort of laughable sort of state thing where you were like, no, this is a ridiculous thing, especially when you are comparing to something like E.T. when he's on a bike, the next thing... Oh, actually, I was kind of expecting the wheelchair to start flying, actually, in the next... in a couple of... I wouldn't have been surprised.
Yeah, I was wondering if it, like, hit a ramp or something and then, you know, have a shot from the ground. around of it going past the moon, but I guess to recreate that scene probably would have actually brought real lawyers down on them.
Oh, I know, yeah. So there would be more than just the lawyers chasing after Eric on the wheelchair. But yeah, that part, again, seemed like a real blatant rip-off. So I think he gets from here, they end up taking Mac to... Oh, yeah, this is where it all starts. Because I know earlier you did mention the fact when the TV's not working that Mac puts his hand on and it starts to work. That's kind of our first glimpse into sort of what happens... Because we're getting sort of near the ending here, but when he saves Eric, but I can't even remember how we even got to that stage. I just remember the hilarious...
Well, I mean, we got the dramatic rescue from the chase scene when Big Brother and was it Debbie, the big sister of next door? The next door girl?
Debbie, yeah. I can't believe I only know that name and nothing else.
Yeah, well, anyway, they all rock up in Mum's van and... literally pull him off the road and into the back of the van in just, I think that would be nearly impossible, but fine, before going on a road trip because they worked out that Mac could communicate where the rest of his family was, again, somehow. But, like, The government agents see the van, and it's a very distinctive van, and as they're driving off to try to go where Mac wants them to go, and, like, these police cars are going past, and it's like, seriously, that van is so distinctive, and looks like nothing else on the road. How can any police car drive by it? Because surely, like, a description of the van had to have been put out there to pull it over. And there's this weird bit where they're driving down this road and they're suddenly surrounded by horses for no reason, complete with suitable 80s guitar rock in the background.
I had no idea. I think on that theory website, I think it also brought up some theory about that, but I had no idea what the horses were supposed to be about. But yeah, that was quite something that I wasn't expecting. It was almost like they were... I don't know, supposed to be comparing that they were going a certain speed, or I have no idea. It was just probably another thing that they were trying to throw in to make it somewhat creative in this probably not very creative movie.
I think it was like, everything else in this movie is so bland, we need to put in something arty. Horses!
Oh, again, yeah, but by now you've scratched your head so many times that, yeah, it's almost probably assumed that something ridiculous like that would come up next.
But that definitely led into, I think, one of the creepiest moments with the aliens when they come across an abandoned mine, of all things, and they go inside, and the mine is obviously wheelchair accessible as well, because Eric ends up in there. You don't actually see him get into the heart of the mine, but he seems to get in there fine. At first I thought they were just sleeping, because obviously, again, kids' movie, but they all had their eyes open. And then it's like, oh, hang on, are they dead? Oh, no, they're just nearly dead, but they're just lying there with their eyes wide open, staring blankly and just going, that's creepy. Oh, look, they've got Coca-Cola to revive them, so it's all good.
I know, which is also just as creepy. But yeah, again, like, if kids hadn't already left the cinema by now, yeah, these are some pretty full-on things for them to be dealing with, seeing this in a film. I even thought it was a bit full-on, and I'll never get that look of those aliens out of my brain.
But, yeah, so Coke, not only refreshing, it also has alien healing properties.
So go out and grab one today.
Think of that next time you have a Coke. This thing brings aliens back to life.
Oh, but yeah, I don't know if that was the best message they wanted to be getting across, but I think we've already, by this stage of the movie, you're already, yeah, I don't know what you're thinking.
but yeah, I mean, the bit you're referring to, it does escalate very quickly to, they're trying to keep the aliens under wraps and they've got to stop to get petrol, and of course... they get out and everything goes pear-shaped, and even though that we know these aliens are pretty much invulnerable to everything but exposure, I suppose. That's what the aliens almost died from, exposure and not being able to get a steady stream of Coca-Cola into their systems. So when the gas station explodes, because the freaky dad alien managed to get his hands on a gun, and the cops started firing at the petrol station, and we get this massive explosion just as Eric is going in there, he's going, "No, they won't hurt you!" Boom! And then it got dark.
I know, and it's like... And for a start, it's like, how does he know that the dad won't kill you, won't do anything? He's standing there with the gun being all gangly and weird, but anyway...
Because I think they're all as nice as Mackies. But yeah, just full on. It's like they rush over to where this kid's just lying on the ground, and they're there going, Eric, and I'm a doctor, oh! And then he's gone. It's like... Sorry, you just full-on killed the kid in the wheelchair? I mean, I know what's coming. I'm positive I know what's coming. But still.
Yeah, you got to the stage where you killed it.
Yeah. Again, one of the things, when you compare it to everything else in the movie, it's just so sudden and so out of step with nearly everything else we've seen in this movie up to this point. You're sort of going, yeah, what now? Oh, he's dead.
No.
Okay. I know he's going to get saved by the aliens, but you're really milking this scene. Mum comes and Mum's going, oh, my baby. And it's like, holy crap, you are just milking this for everything. Seriously, we know it's going to have a happy ending. There's no way a movie sponsored by McDonald's featuring Ronald McDonald as himself, as it says in the credits, is going to have a disabled boy die. And stay dead.
I was actually flabbergasted about it, because that's a big thing you notice in a lot of movies. They don't, especially in family movies, they don't tend to kill children. Let's just say, you know. And it's this was quite again. I wonder if too the fact that I was saying earlier about they may have ended up just getting somebody in a wheelchair to play the part, like it hadn't originally been thought of. Like, I don't know if this is probably adds even more of the heart wrenching emotion to it. But yeah, it goes dark so quickly, and God, for those kids, if any kid that wasn't already mortified by now would probably be pretty horrified after having seen this bit. Oh my God, yeah.
But when the aliens come walking out of the fire quite dramatically, and you know you see what's coming a mile away, it did cross my mind thinking, I wonder if they're going to try to bring him back to life with a Coke.
Oh, oh yes. Well, we have already proved that it only really works for aliens.
That's right. So yeah, they've got to rely on sudden mystical alien energy.
The same alien energy they used to start the TV. Aha, I love how they've brought that back into it again. Aha, see what they did there? I don't want to give them credit for too much.
They didn't fix the kids' legs, but they probably would have been a bit too much, especially if they were trying to, you know, have the diversity of having a genuinely disabled kid as the main character.
I half expected, and I don't know if this is really bad, but I half expected it to be a, oh my God, I can move my legs situation, you know, that's been parodied in so many movies, and I'm like, oh, I'm glad they didn't go for that.
Yeah, I think that would have just been like, undermined the whole point of having that kid as a main character in the first place.
Oh, I know. But by now, I don't think I was caring. I was too busy probably either wiping the tears away from my face or just going, what the hell is this? Sometimes I think it's better only to stay with those Conan clips, the Paul Rudd shows, than having to get through this entire thing. But anyway.
And as for what happens, and look, I could not help it. I don't, like, normally talk politics on this podcast, but given the current political climate, particularly with what's often referred to as illegal aliens, yeah, the whole citizenship scene that happens very quickly after that with the aliens in what appeared to be suits from the 1950s in amongst all these people from the 80s. yeah, being sworn in as citizens of the United States of America, I'm just going, that would never happen.
I know, exactly. But is everyone just suddenly all cool with these aliens? Yeah, let's have them walk amongst us and give them citizenship. Oh, well, we're there. At least they've actually finally given the father some clothes, so he's not walking around quite weirdly. Or he's still walking weirdly, but it's not as awkward.
Yeah, yeah. The whole thrusting he does is a little less, little less uncomfortable now that he's wearing clothes. But then it's like, what have these aliens been doing? Because they drive off in like this pink convertible Cadillac that appeared to be from the early 60s. So it's like, okay, they've got money for clothes. They've got money for a car. They still only walk, they still only talk using this bizarre whistling. What have these aliens been doing? It's just suddenly they're citizens. They're all dressed up in their Sunday best from the 50s, and they're driving off in a car from the early 60s.
I know. It's like they've tagged this thing on because, you know, like as we see when they drive off, it comes up with that bubble, we'll be back, in like as a big bubble gum bubble. Or apparently that was because they thought they were going to make possibly a second film or a spin-off. So I'm wondering if they would have, God, could you imagine another movie when it was just all them going, dressed in, driving their pink Cadillac, dressed in their Sunday finest. I actually don't think I want to see that. But yeah, I wonder if it would have been explained more in the second movie. But this was so strange and so tagged on at the end. It was almost like they needed to have something that was going to possibly lighten the tone after the almost death scene.
Mm-hmm, possibly. But yeah, when they, because they briefly show a Mac, like, chewing and blowing a bubble just so they can set up that giant "we'll be back" bubble that appears at the end.
You're ridiculous.
But, I again, that came up and it was just like, I just had to laugh because it's like, even if I had have seen this back in the day when there could have still been a potential sequel, I never would have believed that this movie would have got a sequel. It'd be like expecting the Duck to have a sequel. So it just straight up, that just gave me quite a good laugh right at the end before the closing credits. That closing credit music. Oh, good grief.
They're probably thinking by now no one's even sitting in the cinema to hear it. So, but yeah, oh no. And sometimes I must admit I do like when we have now in newer films how we have things like stingers. They almost are a good thing to look forward to. Sometimes the rest of them are just so mundane. I can't compete nowadays. I think I'm too spoiled.
Yeah, it's weird not to have that little teaser of something else like halfway through the credits or at the end. So. But
that said, I don't think I wouldn't have wanted a teaser of those aliens. Anyway.
Yeah, I think I could have done with that a teaser of the dad alien in an office trying to deal with a photocopier and making it work again to the cheers of his workmates. You know, I can pass on that because that is exactly what I pictured with him working.
Oh, that's what I exactly pictured the whole second movie to be. God, you know how you have done the Star Wars Holiday Special and the first 15 minutes is Chewbacca talk? Yeah, that's kind of what I imagined the Mac and Us would be. Oh my God, I'm already naming it. Oh, please, make it stop.
Christian Fletcher presents Mac and Me Too! Mac and Us! Wow, you're onto something!
Oh, God. Well, if I ever do it, please make sure we put it on the podcast sometime. I'd have to make it a terrible movie. I actually think I'd probably make a better movie than they did in 1988, so... Maybe.
Maybe. I somehow think we're never going to know. But it's a fun thought.
Oh God!
I think we may have covered over most of what we want to cover over. Was there anything else from your experience of watching the movie? Just bizarre scenes or strange happenings that you wanted to mention?
Look, to be honest, I think I've pretty much mentioned all of the ones, and I know it's funny because you've brought up a couple more that I've either forgotten about because I was so inundated with so many other amazing jaw-dropping moments. But I would actually say this would, this definitely belongs on one of those worst movie lists. It's one of those legitimate ones. I can't believe it, actually. So, but yeah, I'm skipping ahead there. But I think I'm pretty sure listeners are getting an idea of how we felt about this movie. I forgot to mention early on, I went in thinking it'll be Flight of the Navigator meets E.T. Oh, God, I wish it had been that.
You were so very wrong. So, well, you... You picked this movie, Christian, so first up, you've got no one to blame but yourself, and secondly...
I know, it was curiosity.
But that also means that it's my turn to go first with regards to, I suppose, what redeemable aspects there may be, and if this movie is, in fact, redeemable. Now, we've mentioned the aliens a few times, and I'm just going to pass on... something that that Susie, my wonderful wife and co-host of the What the History podcast, got to get that plug in every time, said when she actually briefly popped her head in and saw Mac and described him as a cross between Gollum and Dobby, which I felt was pretty accurate.
Oh, good one, Susie. That's awesome.
And look, I've got to admit, I started watching this movie, I was in a really, really bad mood, and I was thinking, I've got to watch this damn movie now, and it's going to be complete awful trash. That may have been a good thing, because it didn't quite reach those levels, so it actually surprised me slightly. But look, this is full of dodgy acting, cheesy music, so many convenient plot coincidences and just assumptions that are never explained, horrible visual and sound effects, spurious dance numbers, and just the gratuitous product placements for this entire movie is completely unbelievable. But I mean, as I mentioned before, it did draw me in, as I was very curious about how the alien would finally be discovered. And look, I ended up actually liking Mac more than any human cast member in this entire movie. It did drag in places, but then in other places, things just happened so fast, it was hard to keep track. But at least, you know, it pushed through the very contrived plot pretty quickly. And, I've got to admit, Christian, this one, it's a bad, bad, bad movie, but I found myself thinking it was pushing towards that line, that magical line, and I seriously, honestly, I think just barely, just by a whisker, just by a nose, this movie does cross over into the so bad it's good territory. I got a lot of laughs out of this movie, just with how insane some of the situations were and just how completely left of field things just happened, and just the sheer ridiculous awfulness of this movie meant that I ended up having a good time. And you know what, Christian? For me, that's enough to make this movie redeemable.
Whoa! What? Whoa, blown away! Oh my god. Well, actually, not to steal your thunder, but I was going to say I second a lot of the stuff that you say, Trevor, but definitely taking this movie onto the so bad it's good thing. And I don't like to use that term much. I've had criticism in the past from people using that term because films should be seen on all of their merits, etc., etc. But yeah, so bad it's good. I think I found another sort of one of my, I'm not going to say favourite bad movies, but one of those movies that I think I'll like to bring out in a group situation just to shock people and go, oh my gosh, this movie actually exists. Unfortunately, the movie feels just so cheap and tacky. It was, I said earlier, it reminded me a lot of Troll 2, and I think it felt so much like that, just that real sort of very basic, not much of thought's been put into it. I literally think they've got a Macca's burger and hung a movie around it. That's pretty much what it feels like to me, and as we said, it took so much time to build in before they saw Mac that, you know, by the time you're up to that stage, there wasn't really much room for much else to happen. You had shallow characters that you didn't really weren't into, and MGM, those aliens were so scary, they were almost laughable. But, Trevor, I did find myself enjoying it for the so bad it's good angle, and I found that, yeah, I was pretty much laughing the entire way through. The movie should actually have been called McDonald's and Me. That would have probably felt, and probably been a lot more, not cheated people as much, but I'm sure going in they may have known what to expect. Oh, Trevor, it's hard. I don't think I can give it redeemable because of the fact that it is so bad. I do see it as a so bad it's good, but it's not a redeemable movie whatsoever. So I'm not going to give it that whisker over the line. I'm going to say irredeemable, but I have no hesitation in getting it out again to make other people watch it and see what they think.
I mean, I don't think I'm going to rush back to it, but look, if somebody said, hey, I'm going to check out this movie, Mac and Me, I'd be saying, oh, good. I'm going to come over and I'm going to watch you watch it. And then I would just popcorn and stare at their reactions all night long because I think that would be a very fun time.
So it could be an initiation movie. So here we go. We could be starting Mac and Me parties. Actually, no, I'm not going to rush to start doing them. Oh, good God.
Wow. So there we go. That's our first split decision of the year, which means it's actually the first time one of us has found a movie redeemable this year. Things are looking up.
I know. I know. Gosh. And I, of course, I couldn't follow all the way through. It had to be a 50-50, but you never know. I don't know, Trevor. It's in your hands next. So it could go both redeemable for the next one. We won't know until, yeah.
We'll have to see. But before we get onto that, we do like to finish our talk about the movie on a high note. So, okay, I found this just redeemable, probably for all the wrong reasons, but, you know, that's fine. Christian found it irredeemable, and that's fine too. But this movie does have its fans, and we do like to finish with a nice positive review for someone who is a true fan of this movie. So I grabbed another review, and I think this may mirror some of our other thoughts. The title of this review is A Feverish Nightmare Born from American Capitalism. Listen, if you managed to find this movie, you probably know what to expect. If you're like me and you're a fan of hilariously terrible, outrageous, horrendously misguided films, then this belongs in your collection. For those unaware, this is a truly garbage E.T. ripoff bankrolled by McDonald's. There isn't much else to say other than you will cry from laughter, but you will also cry from fear. It gained a lot of infamy from Paul Rudd showing one of the clips whenever he's on Conan or whatever, but that clip is only the tip of the iceberg. If you think you'll enjoy this, you probably will. 5 stars.
Oh, there we go. That's a review that manages to bring up the infamy around the film as well, because I think it's really hard to actually talk or think about this movie without thinking about some of the controversy and the bizarre things around it. So, yeah, I think that sums it up quite well. But, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I may have said it's redeemable, but I still stand by the fact that it's a bloody bad movie.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I think I'd rather read a Big Mac. And I don't mean a mysterious alien creature.
I'm not going down that rabbit hole. That's a very bad rabbit hole. I'm walking away from that. And God, I can't get the image out of my head. We've got to move on fast.
Yeah. Oh, next movie.
The next movie is a request, Christian.
Oh my gosh, I always like requests because we get something a bit different. So,
we do. And this request comes from someone very near and dear. This request is from the aforementioned Susie Holland, my wonderful wife and co-host of What the History Podcast, also known as Violet Von Dutch. For those who are into the Brisbane burlesque scene, you may have seen her perform a few times. Captivating. I probably have a cross-sounding bias, but it's true. Okay, fine. Now, the movie that Susie has requested, now, it was a box office bomb. It didn't even break even on its budget. However, it has gained a bit of cult favour in the intervening time. The lead role had only appeared in one movie prior to that, being a late 70s sex comedy, and had previously been a Playgirl model. However, keep that in mind when you look at the supporting cast, includes names such as Timothy Dalton, Brian Blessed, Max von Sydow, and even one of our faves, Christian, Richard O'Brien. So we're going to go back, even further back. We're going all the way back to the start of the 80s, to 1980, and we're going to check out Flash Gordon.
Awesome. I knew that it had to happen at some stage. But I don't want to give away too many thoughts, but I don't think this should be regarded as a movie that needs to be redeemed. But I do know that it has some detractors out there, but it also has some pretty big fans. But gosh, I haven't seen the film for a while. I actually already own the DVD, so I can easily pop that on. So yeah, I'm willing to give it a go, Trevor.
Yeah, I've seen it a few times, but I've never actually watched it through. I've never actually watched it with my redeeming features hat on, so we know that it makes a difference from time to time.
Oh, definitely. I've seen favourite movies turn into squalor when you have your redeeming features hat on, so it always puts a whole new spin on it. So I'm looking forward to it, and he's hoping we can both redeem it this time to tip the scales another way for 2017.
Mm-hmm. Or should I say, maybe all three of us could redeem it. Ooh, mystery.
Ooh, aha. Well, I think that's a great idea. I was going to say, with Susie wanting to, with Susie's recommendation. So I think we should possibly look at that as well.
Absolutely. Now, if you do want to watch Flash Gordon before our next podcast, we will give you a little taste of it with a bit of the trailer at the end of the podcast. But it is available to stream on Foxtel Play and Stan, or you can rent or buy it on Google Play. Plus, I think it's a pretty easy movie to find in the bargain bins if you're out there looking for a copy. So, it should be a nice, easy one to find. I have found out since that Macamee was fully available on YouTube. I just had neglected to check before our last podcast. So,
I thought MGM would have taken it down. So that's interesting to know. I suppose MGM have realised we're not going to make any more movie out of this, the money out of this movie.
I think that's a very, very, very true fact. And I think on that note, with our split decision on Mac and Me, so everyone out there, I'm afraid you're going to have to make up your own mind by checking it out yourself. with Flash Gordon to look forward to next time, I think that's a good spot to wrap things up. So thank you for listening. If you do want to get in touch with us, please do. We're very easy to get in touch with. You can head to RufusProject.com and leave a comment below this very episode on the webpage. You can find the Rufus Project on Twitter or Facebook very, very easily. You can send us an email to podcast@rufusproject.com. We would love to hear your thoughts. If you think we've been too harsh on Mac and Me, have we been too generous? What do you think of Flash Gordon? Do you have any requests yourself? We would love to know.
Definitely. And gosh, and as we always say, Trevor, even if the movies aren't very good, or if the movies are so bad it's good, the chat's even better. That didn't really come out very well. I didn't want it to sound like the chat's so bad it's good. Well, you never know. But yeah, we always have a great time.
We do indeed. Now, talking about a great time, Christian, you're known to organise a few great times yourself. Oh, this is going off the rails. Do you have anything? Do you have any upcoming events that you would like to plug?
As I had to quickly run and grab the events calendar because there's so many things coming up. We've got the return of Roaring 20 Cinema at Metro Arts. We've got the Rocky Horror Picture Show with infamous Cards for Sorrow live floor show featuring two possible members of the podcast, i.e. Trevor and Christian, and that's taking place at Chanel Theatre on the 24th of March. Oh my gosh, I've got Monty Python coming up. We've got John Waters. We've got a 50s and 60s afternoon. Look, just head to ChristianFletcher.com and you'll have your events sorted for the rest of the year.
Fantastic. Always a good thing, and definitely looking forward to donning the riffraff costume again. It's been a while. So
it's been a while, yes. Can't wait. So.
And if you want to hear more from me and particularly my wife, Susie, of course, the Rufus Project Network. We have two podcasts. That counts as a network. Also has the What the History podcast, which can be found at wthpod.rufusproject.com. Or if you actually search WTHpod on Google, we're finding that's actually starting to get a few results. Yay! But that's a little taste of bizarre history. It only goes 15, 20 minutes tops. So it's a nice little fun history podcast. That's well worth a listen. So the more people that get into that, the better. We're getting some good feedback, so we'd like to keep that growing, which would be awesome.
So all your bases covered there, ladies and gentlemen. So, so on that note, Trevor, I look forward to chatting Flash Gordon. In the meantime, we'll be checking out What the History and possibly making everyone else watch Mac and Me, if they feel like it.
Absolutely. You have been warned. There we go. And, see you next time.
Bye.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
An obscure body in the SK system, Your Majesty. The inhabitants refer to it as the planet Earth.
I like to play with things a while before annihilation.
Pathetic Earthlings! Who can save you now?
Flash! Savior of the universe!
Strange object imaged in the Imperial Vortex.
Flash!
Prepare her for our pleasure!
Flash!
Don't kill him yet, Father. I warned him.
He's a miracle.
Go, Flash, go!
Flash!
Flash!
But it's good, what's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm the B, says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.
So deep.